On holiday in the South, Stalin learned that Ryutin, an old Bolshevik, was trying to create an opposition to dismiss him. He reacted fast, writing to Molotov. With regard to Ryutin, it seems it's impossible to limit ourselves to expelling him from the party. He will have to be expelled somewhere as far as possible from Moscow. This counter-revolutionary scum should be completely disarmed. Simultaneously, Stalin arranged a series of show trials and conspiracies by so-called wreckers. Stalin redoubled the push for collectivization and raced to industrialize at red-hot speed. As the tension rose, he stoked the martial atmosphere, inventing new enemies to intimidate his real opponents in the party and among the technical experts who said it could not be done. Stalin frantically ordered Molotov to publish all the testimonies of the wreckers immediately, and then, after a week, announced that all these scoundrels will be executed by firing squad. They should all be shot. That summer of 1930, Nadia was suffering from a serious internal illness, so he sent her to Carlsbad for the best medical treatment and to Berlin to see her brother Pavel and his wife Xenia. Her medical problems were complex, mysterious, and probably psychosomatic. Nadia's medical records, that Stalin preserved, reveal that at various times she suffered acute abdominal pains, probably caused by an earlier abortion. Then there were the headaches, as fierce as migraines, that may have been symptoms of synostosis, a disease in which the cranial bones merge together. Even though he was frantically busy arranging the 16th Congress, which crowned him as leader, and fighting enemies in the villages and the Politburo, Stalin's letters were never more tender. Stalin worried about the loyalty of the Red Army. The secret police, the OGPU, forced two officers to testify against the chief of staff, Tukhachevsky, that gifted, dashing commander who had been Stalin's bitter enemy since the Polish War of 1920. Tukhachevsky was hated by the less sophisticated officers who complained to Voroshilov that the arrogant commander makes fun of us with his grandiose plans. Stalin agreed the plans were so overambitious as to be almost counter-revolutionary. The OGPU interrogations accused Tukhachevsky of planning a coup against the Politburo. In 1930, this was perhaps too outrageous even for the Bolsheviks. Stalin, not yet dictator, probed his powerful ally, Sergo. Is it possible? What a business. Discuss it with Molotov. However, Sergo would not go that far. There would be no arrest and trial of Tukhachevsky in 1930. The commander turned out to be 100% clean, Stalin wrote disingenuously to Molotov in October. That's very good. It's interesting that 7 years before the Great Terror, Stalin was testing the same accusations against the same victims, a dress rehearsal for 1937. On the 19th of December, a plenum gathered to consolidate Stalin's victories over his opponents. Plenums were sittings of the all-powerful Central Committee, and resembled the chorus of a vicious evangelical meeting with constant interjections of "Right!" or "Brutes!" or just laughter. The plenum sacked Rykov as premier and appointed Molotov. Sergo joined the Politburo and took over the Supreme Economic Council, the industrial colossus that ran the five-year plan. He was the ideal bulldozer to force through industrialization. The new promotions and aggressive push to complete the plan in 4 years unleashed a welter of rows between these potentates. They defended their own commissariats and supporters. When they changed jobs, they tended to change allegiances. As chairman of the Control Commission, Sergo had backed the campaigns against saboteurs and wreckers in industry. The moment he took over industry, he defended his specialists, rowing constantly with Molotov over his budgets. Kaganovich, just 37, became Stalin's deputy secretary, joining the general secretary and Premier Molotov in a ruling triumvirate. Brash and masculine, Lazar Moiseevich Kaganovich was a workaholic. Trained as a cobbler with minimal primary education, he looked first at a man's boots, sometimes forcing the wearer to take them off so he could admire them on his desk. Kaganovich had an explosive temper, and constantly clashed with plodding Molotov, who described him something of a ruffian. Despite his strong Jewish accent, Lazar was regarded as the magnate's best orator. He really captured the audience.